This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling wars.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard, evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation, turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comments section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at green_weird, which is spelled W-Y-R-D. This episode, we have weak thoughts about atrocities committed on children in Pennsylvania and Yemen. Middling thoughts about the Democratic Socialists of America and their role in American politics, and closing thoughts on the Wisconsin primaries. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now for some weak thoughts.
Waste your life in a struggle for power, all men thus reduced to please. So fuck it, just do whatever you please. For the night commuters in Uganda, to the poor crack babies in Atlanta.
Hi, everybody.
You can email the podcast at tmwttpod@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. You can find Charles on Twitter at green_weird, which is W-Y-R-D. You can use the hashtag TMWTT, hashtag Embarrassing Wisconsin. I look for those every week to come up with topics for the show. We have a Facebook page, and we go to www.stoneduckmedia.com for all of our episodes. All right, Charles, so... I don't even know that we have any topics for the beginning of the show.
I mean, I don't want to talk about Omarosa. I mean, I will say that I find her way more credible than anybody else who's jumped ship off the Trump administration because, as she herself noted, she is a published author. So,
yeah, I don't have... I
think it's true.
Yeah, it's like... I mean, I found... Yeah, so like when I heard about the bringing a recording device into the skiff, into the Situation Room there, in the White House, and she recorded John Kelly, like my first thought is like, okay, that's gotta be, like yeah, that's really bad that that happened. I don't know that I necessarily think she should be punished, although she probably shouldn't be working in a White House again, but it's like. Just what a shitty operation they have going on there.
Yeah, I mean, the Situation Room where the president and his top advisors are supposedly, like, defending national security, and Kelly's using it to fire Omarosa, and, yeah, doesn't even ask her to turn out her pockets. The reality TV star is going to be recording you.
Oh, and she was sly enough to, like, hit record and all that.
Oh, I'm sure she was just recording all the time, right?
Yeah, and she just...
Just had some kind of lapel mic to a recorder in her pocket.
And probably had, like one of those, like, batteries in her purse or whatever. She just constantly have it plugged in.
No, you get one of the reporter recorders from, like, that are still physical tape, so they don't need any power.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be reviewing her book on the podcast. I don't particularly want to read it.
I don't think we need to.
Yeah.
The only thing interesting that she had to say was that she said Trump knew about the emails before they were even released. So other than confirming everybody's worst suspicions, it's not really especially useful.
Yeah.
Like a tertiary evidence of tertiary evidentiary value.
Yeah, I mean, she's kind of talked about, like, the use of the N-word and things like that by the president. I don't know. I mean, she gets hit back by, like, by all these reporters in, like, the exact same way. They're like, which is, I guess, a valid point, which is like, but we were listening to you vouch for him for years.
Years?
I mean, she was first on The Apprentice. It was, like, what, 2000? I heard her say it, or at least she first met him in 2003 or 4 or 5 or something like that. Like, it was a while ago.
To be honest, I've never even watched a single minute of The Apprentice.
No, I have no idea. I've only seen, like, yeah, like, clips making fun of it or whatever back in the day. Yes. Where it'd be, like, showing him go, you're fired and stuff. And then when he was running for president, I saw the clip of him asking Meatloaf if he should run for president. Like, that was, like, years old at the time from the Celebrity Apprentice. Which one of you thinks I should run for president? Who thinks that's a good idea? And, like, for some reason, Meatloaf is, like, all about it.
Dude, that's a great idea. Well, he's got to see the comedic value, right?
I think he... Well, actually, I think Meatloaf is conservative. I don't know if Trump was conservative at the time. I don't know if that got into birther territory yet. I think he only became a conservative when there was a black Democrat as president. I think that's... He's like, oh, no, I'm a Republican.
And I want to see his birth certificate.
Yeah, no, it's... Anyway, yeah, Omarosa, though. I don't really have any reason to, like... It's like there's a lot of, kind of, like, character assassination reasons you could... You know, say, like, oh, I shouldn't believe you because you were fired. You could be out for vengeance and all this stuff. But all of those reasons were proposed by the White House initially. So I trust the White House less than I trust, like, any individual except for the president from the White House. Because that's just, like, it's like a cumulative effect of lying. And so, yeah, I don't know. That just makes me immediately, like, question, hey, maybe she's not out for vengeance. Although you could be out for vengeance and still be telling the truth, by the way.
Well, you heard her, like, the settlement that all the Trumpian exiles are offered, right? 15 grand a month. And she basically put her middle finger up at that and was like, I'm going to release all of this. I mean, sure, it's a business decision in that she's probably going to make more from the publicity in the book than she would make from that, but... You know, that's why Spicy described him as a unicorn riding a unicorn jumping over a rainbow.
I have heard it brought up that it's like, well, she also could have not turned on the president, taken that money, but then also just, you know, like...
Written a book like Spicy did?
Nah. Gone on Fox News. Like, she could have been like a token black person on Fox News for, like, the rest of her life.
Nah, she's savvy. She knows which way the wind's going to blow.
No, yeah, I mean...
Cards is going to tumble, and she just underneath it.
Yeah, I suppose I see what you're saying. But I don't know, I mean... Yeah, I guess. Like, she could just be going with the zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if she really did see that much... maybe not even things she can prove, but she kind of, like, was around, like, that toxic of an environment where she's like, no, there is, like, illegal shit going on here.
I mean, she already talked to Mueller, so what more can we want?
Oh, I didn't know she did.
Yeah, she's absolutely talked to Mueller.
Here are the tapes.
Here are the tapes, sir. Well, thank you very much, ma'am. You make me proud to be an American.
Yeah. yeah, I don't know. Okay, so what else?
Yemen, that... The Hodeidah is still under attack by the, well, I'm not going to say Saudi coalition anymore. They're just the U.S. coalition.
Why are you making that differentiation?
I don't think it matters anymore because you heard about the terrible strike, right? That happened a few days ago.
Yeah, could you tell?
The Yemeni school bus that was carrying a bunch of kids to a summer camp from the U.N. refugee program. They were all going to take these kids for... away from their horrible situation for at least a couple of days and let them be kids out in the wilderness. And instead, Mike Pompeo, and according to this CNN article I'm reading right now, Mike Pompeo and MBS had a good old sit down and said, yes, we should absolutely kill those kids. Well, I mean, they may not have known that they were kids, but yeah, they absolutely authorized the strike. And yeah, they spoke about it.
How could we have known there were kids in that school bus?
I hope everybody has to watch that fucking minute of video of the kids playing around and laughing and being joyful little fucking kids. And then follow it with the, you know, them pulling the bodies out of the wreckage and then holding the English imprinted pieces of American-made bombs out of the wreckage.
And so that was, was that, so it was American-made, was it shot by?
No, it was shot by a Saudi Arabian, an American-made plane that was piloted by a Saudi Arabian pilot that was fueled and armed by Americans, or, well, by the Saudis, by Americans on behalf of the Saudis.
Why would the Secretary of State be part of a conversation like that?
That's, in a readout of Pompeo's conversation with Saudi Crown Prince MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, and for new listeners to the show, the top diplomat made no mention of last week's Saudi-led airstrike on a school bus in Yemen that killed dozens of children. On Tuesday, when asked about the omission, State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert, I'm always going to get her name wrong, said not every detail of Pompeo's calls is included in readouts. This is an issue that the secretary did raise. Oh, he talked about the aftermath of it. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Mattis said a 3-star U.S. general would be involved in the examination of a strike, as is typical in this kind of high-level Department of Defense fashion. Elizabeth Warren, for her part, sent a sharply worded letter demanding that the U.S. military explain its role because... who is this? General Joseph Attell, the head of Central Command, has previously suggested the U.S. has little knowledge about how Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates use American weapons and does not track the aircraft missions that the U.S. helps refuel. And, yeah, she asked him about this in a Senate committee or a Senate congressional hearing in March, and... He responded, Senator, we do not. We do not, well, that is to say, they do not track the aircraft after the U.S. refills them. However, earlier this month, The Intercept published a detailed article about a coalition airstrike in May, which targeted Yemen's North Saada government, where a dozen family members slept in tents. You may have heard about this. The bombs went above their targets because there's probably no metal for the laser to guide onto, and all these people were mercifully saved. The article quoted an intelligence report that includes, quote, what appears to be comments from an American intelligence analyst, unquote, who closely supervised the strike from a coalition command center in Riyadh, suggesting that U.S. military observers had detailed information about how strikes unfold. So the only thing Saudi in this mix is apparently the Saudi commander listening to the American advisor and maybe the Saudi pilot who hits the button, and at that point it seems kind of, I don't know, rhetorical to say that it was a Saudi strike and not American.
Yeah. I remember early on in the Trump administration, relatively early on, because I think we talked about it on the show before in an early episode, about how... like, U.S. command, like, bigger decisions are going to lower ranks. It would seem to me that you wouldn't want that done in a situation like Yemen, because it's not, like, a full-scale battlefield, or at least for the Americans, it's not.
I was going to say, tell them the only people who are involved in it isn't is the Americans.
Like we don't have all levels of personnel there.
No.
And then in great numbers. And so, because like one thing, I mean, so like, Obama was like the, you know, he was the droner in chief. I'm not going to say this clever, but he was like they give that weird stat where he shot more drone missiles than anyone, which is like there was more drone missile usage also just happening because of technology. Yeah,
I mean, well, and Bush bought him, but Obama got to fire him.
Yeah, but one thing I've heard about Obama, and I don't know if this is like it seems almost crazy, but that he actually like I think he insisted on giving the okay for like almost all of them.
Yeah, that's true. They had a weekly meeting about it.
Yeah, kind of like Ned Stark type thing, you know? Like,
yeah, I heard about the Ned, or the, well, no, it was a baseball, well, I get that he probably wanted to be involved for that reason, but yeah, it's kind of sick the way it all happened with baseball cards and like a disposition matrix.
Oh, well, I don't know. Anyway, all I was going is that, so like, not only just Trump, but it seems like those higher level, like, is Mattis personally involved in these? The Joint Chiefs? I mean, where is that decision-making, and why is it... Like, okay, fine, it's not going to be Trump. I mean, no one... You're not going to find anyone in America who's going to argue, oh, I think the president should be making all these decisions. But...
Right. He's not camping down in the Situation Room watching all these strikes unfold, or getting up-to-the-minute updates.
Yeah, I mean, like... Unless it's like blue screen behind a campaign rally of his, he's not watching this shit. But I mean, so like, what? I don't like really know where I'm going, but it just what is the
where's the accountability?
Yeah. So like, okay, this 3-star general is going to look into it, you know. But I don't know. Does that shit ever go anywhere?
He'll file a report. General Taguba, another 3-star general, filed his incredible report about Abu Ghraib, which arguably cost him his career, but...
Sure.
That's also the reason we know about half of the stuff that went on.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't trust... You know, so yeah, like, so, like, take, like, the Joint Chiefs. Like, the highest level of generals and admirals. They aren't elected by the people, but they are pretty much... Are they one step... Does the president choose who's on that staff, or do they choose themselves?
That's the Senate.
Okay. Well,
the Senate commissions them in their various ranks, and then the Pentagon's bureaucracy distributes them according to, you know, their abilities and military's requirements.
Oh, okay, so it's the Senate. But, okay, so they're one step, though, removed from democratically elected, positions.
And, well, yeah, but one senator can just put a kibosh on an officer's career at any point.
Well, all I'm saying is that these lower levels of generals, where, you know, there still might be a hand from the democratically elected, but, you know, they aren't, like, people that anyone... knows? You know,
yeah,
like,
that's absolutely true.
So, like, it's like, okay, if you didn't like, which a lot of people didn't, and, you know, there's only so many chances to, like, stick it to the president with elections, and, you know, we only have two parties. I mean, there's a lot of flaws going on here, but it's like, if you don't like the way the president was handling, you know, Obama, you know, his use of droning and bombing and the war on terror, like, there's theoretically that avenue to solve it. Or if you don't like, you know, in general, you're upset with some sort of thing. Okay. It just seems like it's so indirect when it's these, like, nebulous, you know, things going on in this country that doesn't get any reporting here. We don't know who's making any of these decisions. We can't even point to, like, a Norman Schwarzkopf or a Colin Powell, you know, like, kind of...
Right. These motherfuckers don't do press conferences.
Yeah, like, where is that? I mean, like, or, Yeah, I don't know. It's really taking the humanity out of it. And, you know, and then, surprise, surprise, it's leading to, like, atrocities.
Right, which are sanitized from our media landscape, yeah. So we don't see any of it. Like, I don't think MSNBC has covered Yemen but once, thanks to Chris Hayes, in the past, like, what, 3 years now?
Yeah, MSNBC is, I don't know. I haven't watched NBC. I've probably seen more Fox News just because it's on in the background at the occasional, like, restaurant or something, you know, like, Podunk Cafe I go to or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly... I think I once tried to watch Rachel Maddow, like, early in the Trump administration when I was all about, like, every detail of the Russian investigation, and then it got, like, way too overwhelming for one human brain. but, like, I was like, oh, man, like, I keep hearing Rachel Maddow, like, is doing these cool things, following the money and blah, blah, blah. And I just tried to watch it, and it's like she just rambles on with her preface for, like, 30 minutes. I mean, she makes me look, like, concise and short with my talk. Like, she just goes on and on and on, and it's like, I don't know, it's like it's taking in-depth to another level that I just can't. It's so boring to me. And then just in general, I don't think the news network is, like, terribly principled. I think they're just, like, a news network. They're just, you know, they report some news. That's what they do.
Right.
They don't report all the news, though.
Well, they sell advertisements, and then put...
Well, yeah, that's what they do. Yeah. Like, I mean, hey, say what you will about Fox News. You know what they're doing.
Right.
You know, like...
Yeah, there's no secret anymore, right?
I don't think so. I don't... It doesn't even sound like the people over there really, like... like, argued you too much. You know, but remember, like, 10 years ago? Be like, no, I reject that notion that Fox News is a conservative outlet. We have Alan Colmes on here. We have, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Poor guy, cancer.
In fact, last week, we had twice as many liberal commentators as guests on my show than, oh, yeah. You know, like, O'Reilly would get his, you know, underwear all in a bundle every time, you know, someone would say things like that. And now I don't think that people do that anymore. Now they, like, they're proud about it.
They had Kyle Klinsky, the secular talk guy, on, like, what, last weekend or the weekend before, and he kind of honed them in the 5 minutes they put him in front of the camera, but...
What show? Do you know?
It was one of the weekend shows that nobody, of course, watches. So it's not like the president was going to call in to argue with him.
I don't think they're trying to have, like, articulate, well-spoken, well-thought-out... like non-conservatives, though they kind of, like, stumble into that, or they bring someone on and they think that they're going to, like say something, and then they say something else. And
like, there was that one mistaken case, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago now, where they just, like, literally had the wrong person. Like, they thought they were calling, like, this ice friendly Democrat, and it turned out to be, like, somebody running for a primary in Massachusetts who it was not what they expected. And, yeah. But anyways, that's another here and over there. What else is happening in the world?
I'm looking to see if there's any results on primaries. There aren't really. Hey, you know what? Since we're looking on, you know, we're looking for news online to read, to talk about right now, here's something I've been bugged about. Trying to read a goddamn newspaper website on my phone is just, it's, like, impossible. I don't have necessarily the fastest, freshest phone. But, like, every one of them is so bogged down with ads and, like, videos and...
Uh-huh.
And even, like, the pay ones. It's not like you go on New York Times and pay for it and there's no ads.
No, it's still, like, even on the... They're like, hey, allow ads. It's like, no, I don't want to allow ads. I pay for this. Why are you selling my screen space?
And then, like, and they put it in the midst of the text for some of the sites, these ads. And they're like, to me, that's like, it's different than putting it, like, having, like, an article go around an ad in a normal newspaper. Because it's not totally linear. Like, on a phone, it's very top-down. It's like one column, essentially.
Right, and all of a sudden the column's interrupted by...
You know, and then sometimes you, like, accidentally hit on... You know, you click something as you're trying to, like, swipe past it. And that just, like, ruins your day. It's like some video, and now Google thinks that you really want this product. And it's like, it's just a big mess.
It's like, no, I don't want that bullshit lawn care product. So, yeah.
We were talking about a little before the show, a big grand jury report came down from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And it talks about widespread sexual abuse and cover-up of sexual abuse by over 300 priests in Pennsylvania. They found, I believe, like 1,000 or under a lot of victims, but they said, you know, it's likely to be many times more. To me, I mean, this caught my eye. I mean, beyond like, I don't know, I was raised in the Catholic Church, just in general, how horrible things catch your eye. But because, you know, us being in Wisconsin and having Milwaukee play such a pivotal role in the history of that, this unfortunate narrative that's just keeps going. As I was looking for stuff about the Pennsylvania thing, too, there was like something on here about Chilean investigators are like looking into, you know, the exact same thing there.
Oh, that's great.
And this is like, what, 20 years after this stuff started happening? Like, you keep finding it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like they changed their hiring practices. I mean,
I found myself in a Catholic church a few months or so ago, and, for a funeral, and they had, I was like, you know, really bored, and so it was like the viewing, not the funeral itself. You know, so I wasn't really doing anything, so it's just like reading like their you know, like their tack boards that have like news and community events and stuff.
Yeah.
And they had something on there about the new priests being ordained in that diocese, and I was just like, you can't help but have the thought, which one of them is going to rape some child?
Ugh.
I mean, it's...
Well, which one is already raping children? As you
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they didn't have much access, but you don't know. And I don't, you know, like, I don't, I didn't want to, like, point to one of them and be like, nope, that's the guy. But, you know... I don't know what the rates are. I'm sure it's not that high. I mean, there are only like 12 people on this thing. I don't know if it's 1 in 12 priests. I don't know if it's that. Although, I don't know. There can't be that many priests in Pennsylvania. I mean, it's just one state, right?
Right.
It's not even that many people that go to church anymore. I don't know. Maybe there are there.
Well, I mean, certain people are always going to go to church.
Well, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if maybe Pennsylvania has a larger Catholic population than I know.
It was like, according to that article that you sent around, there were 3 million Catholic people in Pennsylvania. So,
they
seem to have a large portion of their population.
Well, so that could be... Usually, you know, a congregation, I don't know what the average for a Catholic church would be. I'd guess it'd be 500 to 1,000. Kind of guessing, though. Okay, so that's a fair number of... Still, though, 300... I guess these aren't 300 current priests, but... I mean, still, 300's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. That's not a statistically insignificant amount.
No.
It's not like you could just find 300 of any group of that many, you know? Like, it's not like finding 300 people in all of the state of Pennsylvania, period. It's like just in this one relatively rare profession.
There's got to be thousands of priests in Pennsylvania, though, right?
Yeah, but still. So let's say there's... Okay, so let's say it's 1,000, to make the math easy,
okay,
is the average congregation. So that would mean there's, 3,000 priests right now. So that's
310%. Yeah.
That's 10% of current. I mean, so let's even say that there's a turnover rate every 10 years or something, 20. Well, they actually, I mean, usually a priest does it their whole life
until they don't move.
Can't. Well, no, you know why they move.
Well, after they almost get caught for sexual abuse. Yeah.
No, it's when a parent goes to the bishop and is like, hey, that priest over there is like sexually assaulted my son. And they're like, oh, okay, we'll take care of it. He'll be out of here. And then he just goes to another goddamn church. Or, like in Wisconsin, in the Milwaukee Diocese, he goes to a fucking school for deaf children. Because that's what they did.
Jesus.
It is the ultimate in depravity, right? I mean, can you think of an instant? If anyone, if you want to feel like the current political situation is not the end of the world, then just look at the current status of the Catholic Church.
Right, it could be worse. It
could be worse. Well, that's what the Q people think, though.
Ugh.
They think it is worse.
We're pointedly not going to cover any of that shit on this show. Cody Johnson did a good enough job. We'll go watch his video if you want.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to say about it anyway. all right. You got any other weak thoughts for us?
The conservative, or the guy, the most conservative guy leading the pack in Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, since 2006 has increased his net worth by 427%. So congratulations on that, I guess.
Wow.
So in 12 years, I mean, I was trying to do the math, and that's like literally an insane return. Admittedly, the Clintons went from penniless to having two houses in the suburbs of New York, but this is insane. Well, maybe not by Brazilian standards. So, you know, on the same note, it could be worse. We don't quite see that level of corruption. I mean, Trump is probably turning a profit for the first time in his life, but, you know, it could be worse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he turned a profit when, you know, like he was laundering money for Russians. Technically, he was profiting.
Yeah. But just, he still went into bankruptcy, so...
The Russian money laundering happened after the bankruptcy. I think there might have been some going on, from what I understand, at his casinos led to the bankruptcy. Like, mm-hmm. The casinos led to the bankruptcy. Supposedly there was some going on there, but it's unlikely he had much of a role in that, and it was just... They knew that the casino had, like, no oversight like they're supposed to. And so people just figured out that you could go do this there, you know, with chips and all that. And so I don't know that he, like... But, yeah, I think all the stuff with the real estate money laundering that happened after 2008, I believe. I think it was after the recession.
Which, well, he's been kind of doing that shit his whole career. Like, even since Trump Tower itself was originally built and inaugurated.
Yeah, but I believe that this big... he's had ties to all types of people for a long time. But there was a big influx... I mean, there was a big influx in general in money from Russia coming over, buying these properties for more money than they're worth.
Right, it's part of money laundering schemes.
Yeah, it's in... What's it? New York, L.A., Miami.
Panama, everywhere.
Well, but I think the three U.S. ones that have been, like, flagged by, what would that be, the Treasury Department, or maybe it's just the
FBI?
Maybe even DOJ. Yeah, I don't know who it was. But they, like, flagged these three cities. First it was New York, then it was L.A., then it was Miami, and then I love this, I heard this not too long back, Marco Rubio had the line, he was like, because, like, he's, like, he's Marco Rubio, so, like, he's trying to, like, defend... You know, his thing, in this case, Florida. But, you know, and he's kind of smart, right? But
kind of.
Yeah, he has a smart bone in him. But so he's like, hey, you know, he's like, so you found three cities that have this kind of money laundering that are propping up the whole real estate market in the city. And you've only looked at three cities. Maybe this is happening in more cities. And we should look at more cities instead of just picking on Miami in this case.
Wow, that's not entirely invalid.
No, yeah, it is. It's great. But it's like, he wasn't saying that the day before they came out about Miami, you know? Like, he's just, like, really selectively intelligent and principled. Like, which is unlikable to me. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he couldn't speak extemporaneously.
That's the funniest. That's, I think, the second funniest. I think the funniest, I don't know. I think the funniest debate moment is Rick Perry, right? With the not able to name the three agencies he wants to cut.
I mean, 2015 and 16 was just so great. Then you had Ted Cruz crying for when he was stumping for Trump on the phone. That phone banking video, I still watch that about once every week. Just to see that broken look on his face. But, you know, we'll all be with you there soon enough, Ted.
Do you think having a healthcare option is important to not going bankrupt and dying horribly young? Do you think education should be egalitarian because to do otherwise would be idiotic for our society? Do you still have some resentment over the fact that millionaire bankers caused widespread misery in 2008 through irresponsible investment behavior, and not only are they not subject to legal ramifications, but they actually profited off the debacle?
Well, you just might be an evil, or stupid, or evil and stupid, democratic socialist.
This ad sponsored by The Establishment.
We are recording this on Tuesday when there's a bunch of primaries going on, and I had just noticed that Bernie Sanders, surprise, surprise, just won his primary. And what I didn't really know, and what is of interest to me, is that he runs in the Democratic primary, but then turns down the nomination to run as an independent in the general. I get
but he doesn't necessarily agree with all parts of their party platform.
Yeah. No, I guess I get running as an independent in and of itself, but so is he running in the primary to, like, make sure there's no competition from any other aspect of the left?
I mean, I'm pretty sure Bernie could take any Democratic or Republican contender combined against with his popularity, and especially in Vermont.
Well, yeah, and I guess, like, if he couldn't, he would lose the primary and then still maybe run as an independent, but he, like... I mean, is that just to... I guess that's just to...
Is that just to secure his place on the ballot? I don't... Maybe it's just a...
But see, that doesn't...
secrecy of Vermont law?
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing. It's something like that. Okay, but anyway, so Bernie Sanders is kind of the face of... even though, no, he has called himself a democratic socialist in ideology for years, but he's not necessarily associated with the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA.
No, I don't think so. I think he's, yeah.
However, his campaign in 2016 clearly has influenced things, and there are now, I mean, I think as of now, there you have Ocasio-Cortez will almost guarantee win her general. And then there's, what's her name? Rashida, I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
Probably one from Michigan, I'm sorry. Yep. I'm not even going to pronounce her name.
It's T-L-A-I-B. Is how you, I don't know how to pronounce it. And she won her primary in the Democratic primary, and she's pretty much expected to run away with the general in that district. So there's at least going to be two people who associate themselves with the Democratic, the DSA, in the Congress now, here come January, I guess. And so, and this is getting a lot of buzz. We've talked about Ocasio-Cortez, I think, now two episodes in a row. One was about her, about comments from sort of establishment Democrats about her. Then last week we talked about the further, you know, the right's opinion of her, which was a little over the top crazy. So I'd like to just talk about the DSA more broadly, rather than like, you know, like who's critiquing them now. But I guess specifically to, like, as, you know, whether it be me or a listener who is like, okay, so these DSA people seem pretty cool, and so do the kind of some of the progressives in the Democratic Party, like, say, Elizabeth Warren, Mark Pocan, Ellison, you know, whoever. And even, I guess, to an extent, Bernie, who doesn't directly associate himself with that group. Like, what are, like, how do we parse out? Are these just kind of branding things? Or is there something more going on here?
Yeah, I was just reading the DSA's webpage, and they predictably do not have, like, a platform, a party platform.
Okay.
They run campaigns. They seem to be, like, as you know, given the their company, very liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't think you would classify them as classical socialists in any sense of the word.
Yeah, and is that so? Democratic socialism is that's a thing from Europe, right? That term.
Mm-hmm.
But the democratic socialists in Europe, are they even classical socialists?
Yeah, arguably they're the modern interpretation of that
okay.
philosophy. The problem is, yeah, it's, I'm not sure how much of the old-time socialism is in, you know, the modern-day interpretation of it.
Sure.
And I don't, like, typical socialism is workers owning means of production, or, you know, this...
Yes. Yeah.
Or a government, a heavy-handed government involvement in the marketplace. But, I mean, other than, like, being super pro-union, that's not exactly what these people have seemed to be about.
Yeah, I mean, they might be like that on, say, a relatively, I mean, for as much as in this country we don't have, like, universal healthcare, it's actually fairly popular.
Yeah, it's, like, insanely popular. Like, a lot of the super hardcore progressive positions rank way above 50% in popularity amongst the American population.
Yeah, and, like, so healthcare, it's, like, also there's, like, tons of countries around the world already doing this, you know.
Every other country as well, in the OECD except us.
Mostly successfully, and so it's, like, you know, they're not exactly, like, radical, I would argue. When it comes to at least that and a few other issues like that. And, you know, they're not like, I think there are classical socialists out there. I was saying to you earlier today in a message that, you know, I occasionally read articles from, I think it's called The Jacobin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of those are fairly radical, but those are more like...
academic.
Yes. Though I don't know that they're written by actual like professors or anything. But yeah, they're more academic. They're more like in theory. Although they might not see it that way. I don't know. But anyway, so I was listening to an interview with Ocasio-Cortez a week or so ago, and she was asked this question, and and actually, I heard an interview with Rashida today, I think it was, and she was asked this question, and their answers, you know, they were asked essentially, why do you call yourself this, and why not just, you know, be a Democrat and, like, be on the very left side of the party? And so Ocasio-Cortez's, she all but said it was essentially branding, you know, where she's like, but I really like her answer. She was like, okay, a Democrat, what does that mean? If I say I'm a Democrat and you're a voter, what does that mean to you? It could mean a lot of things. It's not very specific. But if I say I'm associated with the DSA, well, that now narrows it down at least. You have a better idea of who you are. And that's what a lot of political affiliation, that's what endorsements, that's what all of that's about. And Rashida's answer was, I kind of, her answer was pretty good too, but in a different way. She's like, hey, I'm associated with lots of groups. She's like League of Women Voters and DSA, and she rattled off a few others. And so, but neither of them gave policy reasons.
And that's part of their problem. Like, a socialist ticket could be, you know, like, let's get all of money out of elections. Or mm-hmm. let's, I mean, not exactly take state ownership of the medical industry, but, you know, certainly Medicare for All is not, is like the compromise position there, right?
Agreed, yeah. So, Medicare for All, which seems like highly radical to a lot of people, although not the majority of people, is not the same as, say, like the British, what do they call it there? The national, I'm blanking on it.
Is NHS, it National Health Service.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's the actual government owning all of it, right?
Yeah, all those people are government employees, it's and all managing. Government services, yeah.
And so Medicare for All would not be that. As radical as it might seem here, there would still be people making, you know, money who are not employees of the government.
Right. And we already have Medicare people. Let's just give it to everybody. Like, the people who have Medicare love it.
Yeah, yeah. So, does that bother you that it doesn't have...
Yeah, a lot. I mean, Ocasio-Cortez has a degree in economics from a relatively high prestigious university, so if, you know, she should have more, shall we say, developed socialist tenets. For instance, one thing that you could do is point to the 2008 financial crisis and say if we were in charge, we would have demanded, instead of just like the shitty fucking shares that Geithner offered as part of the TARP and or the various Maiden Lane packages and, you know, toxic asset relief programs, they would have been government ownership. It wouldn't have just been like $25 billion in bonds. It would have been like, you know, converted into Class B stock or even Class A stock.
Mm-hmm.
But like, the government should have, if we're going to subsidize and have oversight, well, especially if we're going to subsidize, the government should take ownership. As, you know, on behalf of the American people, because obviously those institutions were pretty important and their failure was nearly cataclysmic to the global economy. So if they needed help and it needed to come from the government should be way more comfortable putting a lot more strings on it.
Yeah, it's like so many of these, particularly conservatives, but not limited to by any means. You know, there's some of these kind of like cliche, like millionaire politicians and fat cats, and, you know, they come from the business sector and all this. And it's like they would never have made a decision. Like, they would have made sure they got their fucking ownership and cut if it was like their money. You know what I mean?
Right. If they were just like doing this to like buy a business, which. Nobody does that for purely moral reasons, but if, you know, there was a bank that was in trouble and they needed, like, a huge cash infusion like that, the person infusing it would have been like, so I want 55% of your company. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, we're gonna take it private.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah. I suppose the auto industry, that happened around then too, right?
Oh yeah, it did, and we should have taken stock in Chevrolet and GM and all the companies that, you know, we were bailing out.
So what if they would have done that, what is the goal of the government doing that? I mean, beyond, like, to me it just seems more fiscally responsible, honestly, because it's like, otherwise you're spending money and letting other people potentially just mismanage it again. Right. So is that the goal? Is just to have like a government employee like at board meetings or
oversight? I mean, that certainly could be some benefits. I mean, do you think the board is going to be quite so willing to lie if it were, say, an FBI agent at the board of directors meeting? Because if they lied at that, they'd be lying to the FBI.
Yeah. Is it unconstitutional?
I don't see, I've read the Constitution at least a couple times. And I haven't seen anything about it.
Yeah, I don't.
It you know, worships due process, but it's kind of up to us what due process looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't. It feels very different than what, like, the United States normally does, but it doesn't feel unconstitutional to me.
No.
Did you get a chance to read that article I sent out that was a kind of a, here's why socialist is bad for minorities?
Oh, the Atlantic article. No, I didn't. Okay. I didn't need a blood pressure spike.
So, and I'd like to hear your response here. So, the general premise is, and I don't, well, I'll just let you respond. I don't want to influence it. So, the general premise is that democratic socialist is about having the majority, like the people, make decisions, you know, kind of on all levels of the economy and whatever. Their argument is that when you have democracy itself having too much power, that might overrule kind of minority rule of law protections, or could potentially. They gave some decent examples. I'm trying to think of one.
They're making a tyranny of the majority argument.
Yes. Yes. And I think, like, I'm trying to think. There was an example that was, like, it was kind of about, like, business investment and, like, hiring practices. I think were some of the examples brought up. Like, you know, they might not invest in
democracy?
What was that?
Which has very little to do with democracy or socialists in positions of power?
Yeah, so so this is actually okay, I like your response there, because that was what I thought first too. I'm like, wait, why would having some liberals be congressmen lead to, like, this extreme example that this person's saying?
And I won't hire anybody.
And, well, where it's like, cuz, like, I think it was a he, is writing the article from the they seem to be assuming that, first of all, they are classical socialists, not that difference that we talked about earlier.
Right, because the old style socialists, like, let's face it, popular participation in democracy is kind of a new idea. So those people in, like, 19th century Germany who were the old school socialists were autocrats.
Yeah. So, by the way, it's by Connor Friedersdorf in The Atlantic.
That name sounds familiar.
And it's, yeah, it did to me too. It's called Democratic Socialism Threatens Minorities. Yeah, I mean, first of all, the reason I read it is because it's like the ability of a minority to have some power in the like in America, you know, as much as we may critique it, there is something to it. And, like, I'm like, well, I don't want that threatened. So, like,
absolutely not.
And so anyways, the author seems to be pushing it, like assuming it's, like, this communist upheaval. And he, like, quotes, like, Vladimir Lenin extensively in the article.
What? And, like, yeah. Communist? That guy's not even a socialist.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he, like, extensively. There's, like, a big section where he's,
I've
like,
got a book over here, Essential Works of Socialism, that may have been better for him to read.
Yeah, and so it just felt like the person was, like, and I find this, I don't know if this person, I actually don't think this person is a conservative, I don't know, but I find this a lot, particularly on the right, but maybe it's everyone, where it's, like, They just go to this, like, extreme, and they assume the extreme about another's beliefs or an event that's happening or a movement or whatever it is, and
it's the logical consequence of what will actually happen.
But that's only if it's, like completely unchecked and just goes 100% in one direction, which, like, never happens. Especially in America, there's always a moderating influence, like, unfortunately, sometimes.
Right, something killed the progressive era. What was that again?
And, okay, so, like, the two things this person quotes in the article was Vladimir Lenin and then an article from Jacobin, as I was talking about earlier. And, like, I think Jacobin is like further, is more classically socialist than some of these DSA candidates who are like really just progressive Democrats.
Yeah, super progressive Democrats.
They're not really like revolutionary, even though they kind of like say that, like they're like, this is a revolution. You know, like Bernie uses the word revolution all the time.
And Ron Paul before him. I mean, come on.
Yes, yeah, yeah. But they're not like actually revolutionary. Like revolutionaries don't like run for office and then accept defeat with yeah. You know what I mean? Like yeah, I know my history. That's not what revolutionaries do.
Like you can't be revolutionary if you're still in the system.
Yes. And I get what they're doing. It's a rhetorical flourish. You know, it's we
but
know.
The words have to mean things, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, but we know what they mean. Like yeah. We know what they mean. I think.
I hope.
I think most
I
people.
Mean, maybe Ocasio-Cortez is talking about guerrilla warfare. I mean, I assume she isn't, but maybe.
Yeah, you're gonna start seeing like pictures on Fox News of her in like camo and like
Che Guevara shirts reimagined. AOC.
Well, that'd be. I could see
that.
That's some shirts of her. Yeah, I bet those would sell.
Next week on Tell Me What to Think.
So I don't know. I mean, I think your response summed it up. It's like this person is just like jumping to this extreme. It's like, okay, we're just talking about a few people who are like progressive holding office. Like that's really all it is right now. And even if it became a dominant political force, it still would so unlikely even could lead to what this person is fearful of, much less would lead to it.
Yeah, and on a side point, I was thinking about this because, you know, you sent that around and there's been this buzz about socialist economies and governments, and I've been, you know, international studies is what I studied, so I've thought about it. There hasn't been a single liberal government, like, in the past century or two, that's been allowed to exist unmolested. So when they point to, like, the failures of Russia and China and, I mean, they could point at Burkina Faso, but Salak almost got it working. But all those dictators are either fucked with on an economic scale, where Russia didn't have, like, basic infrastructure to produce its own material. I'm talking about socialism, Bernie. This should excite you. Maybe that's what it is. She's just getting excited.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, we've never actually seen a socialist government that was allowed to, you know, progress through its stages of development. They just kind of come into being, and then within, like, months in some cases, their leader is assassinated by maybe some right-wing rivals locally or by some CIA fucking hired mercenaries in some cases.
Have you, so obviously during the height of, like, post-war, you know, United States power, I mean, that was, like, rampant for a few decades there.
Right.
Do you think if more of that was attempted today, like, why don't we see more of it today? Like, because I feel like...
I feel like they've gotten better at covering it up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe.
Like, they don't need to resort to the old-timey mercenaries and, like, guerrilla armies anymore. They just need to provide political campaign donations and social media campaigns.
Yeah.
Just information warfare. And, like, the occasional assassination, but, you know.
Yeah, okay. There's some sense to that. Because I feel like, yeah, I mean, like, America...
what they were doing before.
...is more restrained when it comes to sending... I mean, some of the shit you hear from, like, the 50s... I mean...
Yeah, just kind of way blatant and, like, barely hiding it. It's like, oh, we'll put this operation on and then put a fig leaf over, like, the part where it says U.S. government.
Yeah, and it's just very violent, too. And so, like, who's that guy? Steven Pinker? He has that line of reasoning where it's like we live in the like the best time ever in terms of like almost any metric. You know, like, and it's mostly like a safety health thing. Like, people are living longer. There's fewer wars. What actually surprised me is that there's like significantly fewer wars in the world than even just like, I think, like the 90s or something.
Ago. Yeah.
Which kind of on the surface I knew, but like, you know, just to hear it like kind of more statistically laid out was interesting.
I mean, to get Freakonomics on this, you realize why that is, right? It's the internet, it's social media, it's communications that. You can reach in your phone and send and receive text messages to anywhere, literally anywhere in the world. So wars won't be able to start in nearly the way that they were before because, you know, people know what's going on, man.
Yeah. Of course, the idea of information warfare, but hey, it's a lot less bloody.
It is. Yeah, it's a lot less bloody.
Well, the reason I bring him up, though, is... I just wonder if there's like a more civil, you know, which just seems like crazy because it's like we're bombarded with our thoughts and media about like, you know, what kind of terrible time we're living in, you know, with Trump and everything. But it's like maybe there's like a civil place for more leftist governments, or is it just all going to be kind of the establishment just gradually moves, if at all? But it's like, is that the only way?
They have to retire. I mean, that's part of the reason Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and Chuck Schumer all need to just go away. I mean, I'm not telling them that they have to, like, get out of Congress and stop being representatives, but maybe we could find somebody who's younger, has some fresher ideas. More relevant academic experience? I don't know. What do you want?
I'm talking more, though, internationally.
Oh.
I mean, I guess we are, you know, it's like we're part of the world community, too. So we're included. And I think you're right. It's like, because, like, by every metric, it's like people our age and younger are like, it's just like these, you know, like the word socialist isn't scary to someone our age or younger, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. But just internationally, it's like so. There's clearly like an autocratic, you know, nationalist. Yeah, there's like a thing going on in the world. You know, Russia's behind a lot of it. But you know,
some
like
people are just down on their luck.
That seems to be like a reaction to kind of the world coming together,
right to the left, like fascism typically is.
Yeah,
it's all kind of reactionary.
Yes, but doesn't that mean, I mean, it's not like a rule of physics, but doesn't that kind of get you to think that there's going to be sort of a reaction, and it doesn't even have to be, again, doesn't have to be violent or anything, but, because maybe there is like a little bit of a moving past that going on, so is there going to be kind of like a leftist thing going on, say, in 10 years? 20?
Maybe even, probably in 10 years, but... I don't think it's going to necessarily even take that long.
Yeah. It's so unlikable. Like, the world, like, it's like, do people like this shit? Like, Putin and Hungary guy. I mean, I know, like, they're winning elections, maybe. Like, maybe they're winning elections there.
Yeah.
But it's like, who likes this shit? I'm not even saying, like, the people who are, like, you know, like you and I, who can kind of, like, you know, are more, like, ideologically opposed to it. I just mean, like, who... It, like, it's so distasteful. It just, like, has... Like, it doesn't seem like it's inspiring, you know? Like, the nationalism thing only has so much momentum behind it, I feel.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. The only thing about that I don't know is, you know, like, technology could be a wild card in any direction for these types of things.
I mean, there's conservative activists, mercenaries out there that are just as adept at information warfare as any street-level organizer that you'd ever meet. So.
Yep. Alrighty, and we are back with some closing thoughts. we will talk about some of the primary going on as we talk about a couple other past topics. So, we were just saying Scott Walker, who was effectively unopposed for his reelection campaign, AP called it for him. Surprise, surprise. I wanted to ask you about the Turkish lira. There was some news about that going around.
Yes. The feces finally hit the air mover, as it were. we've been talking about this. I don't know. Was it one of the first... In the first weeks we talked about this, I brought it up.
Yeah, it was early, because I remember you were saying you were, like, looking at the old Google... What was that? Google Financials or whatever?
Finance, yeah.
And you would, like, watch the currency or something?
Mm-hmm. I was looking at the currency numbers today, and they've, like, lost, like, what, 20% since then?
Yeah,
oof. The value of their currency. So things came to a head this week. They were worried about runs on their banks and runs on currency.
Wow.
Yeah. Notionally, people were calm today, but it's Monday and it's profit-taking. Because in economics, like, if something drops by, like, 20% that fast, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden that asset is 20% cheaper. So somebody who is looking to buy it is going to make that decision to buy it. And so there was, like, a 6% increase today, and that's probably what at least some portion of that can be attributed to. Like, just cheap prices and profit-taking.
But it's just going to keep heading
down?
Yeah,
it's going to probably get worse because they haven't really done anything. Like,
That's Erdogan the recurring theme with Turkey, by the way. Every time I ask you that, like, this is just going to get worse. And you're like, yep.
Yeah, Erdogan made his son-in-law head of the Treasury and, well, combined Treasury and Finance Ministry, so he has near total control over all economic measures. Like, the central bank has virtually lost all of their independence, so a lot of economists are calling on them to increase interest rates, and they are almost certainly not going to do that because Erdogan has made it his personal policy to be against them.
Wow.
Yeah. The one thing they did do is change some reserve requirement ratios, which is the amount of money that they have to have against the loans that they put out. But decreasing the reserve requirement ratio in an economic crisis is almost a surefire way to make an economic crisis worse. Because, especially with Turkey, a lot of their problem is that they are suddenly encountering a shit ton of bad loans from a sputtering economy, and the loans are not in Turkish lira, so these local companies are getting hammered in the foreign currency markets that much harder. And which creates a cyclical effect, and when banks can make more loans, considering that their current track record says that they're not good at giving out loans, allowing them to give out more loans is not a recipe for success.
Yeah, there you go.
I got there.
Yeah, I'm seeing there's early numbers in for the Wisconsin gubernatorial primary, but Evers is up. He is the favorite, so I don't know. He's not up by a ton. Mitchell is a little higher than as of now than I was expecting. Royce is in second, but it's way too early.
Wait, Mitchell? Royce is in second? What are you reading?
Royce is in third. This is by TMJ4 2 minutes ago.
I'm looking at... New York Times. They've got Tony Evers, Malin Mitchell, and then Kelda Royce.
Okay.
Paul Soglin, predictably at 3.5% near the bottom. Kathleen Vinehout at 4.7 right above him.
It is shocking to me and speaks to something wrong. And how are Matt... I don't know. This is way too early, so, like... But I might rant on this.
Matt Flynn is a terrible candidate.
Mike McCabe seems like a totally fine dude, but not a great candidate. Evers is likely to win. So if, like, this held for next week, this order, there's just something wrong. There's no reason anyone should be voting for Matt Flynn or Mike McCabe over Vinehout other than they are white men. I'm sorry. It's just, I don't even understand why you would do that. Evers, I at least get, like, there's a logic to that, but that means...
Not good logic. I mean, I was talking about this today with our executive producer. Like, Evers is running for state superintendent, practically a non-competitive seat. We're not going to elect a Republican fucking state superintendent.
You'd think, although there's enough people that vote straight Republican, but yeah, for anyone who's even...
I mean, he keeps getting elected during the Walker era, so how competitive can it be?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and but so he, but that's most of his campaign, though. Is...
Yeah, and that's part of my problem with him. That's why I voted for somebody else.
Yeah, no, that is most of his campaign is, I've won with 70% of the vote in a statewide election. I've never lost a county in northern Wisconsin, and... I just don't know how much that's worth come November of this year.
Yeah, right? We're in a whole different political paradigm compared to previous elections, dude.
And, dude, Scott Walker seems like a total fucking moron, but there's something savvy about him. There's definitely something savvy about Scott
Walker.
Maybe
he knows how to pick an advisor. That's the nearest thing I can pick.
Just not how to mess up.
Well, so, you know,
in
like
the wrong way.
Politicians, it's like who you can get to work for you.
Yeah. All right. All right.
Lieutenant Governor? No, there's no information on that yet.
Okay.
Tammy Baldwin has won her primary, so congratulations.
Oh, they called that. Okay. That makes sense. Actually, speaking of Lieutenant Governor for Wisconsin, there was a little thing going around this past week. About how he was left off of some of the election notices in three newspapers. And there's only, like, I think there's only two Democrats, two or three. It's not like there's, like, a big list like there are for the people running for governor. There's not as many running for lieutenant governor.
Yeah, it's two.
I think it was two.
Mandel Barnes and Kirk Kober. So they just had one listed in, like, three different newspapers. What the hell, guys? For a black guy who is currently trouncing his competition?
Yeah. I don't know what to make of that. I'd hope it's not what I think it is, but it could be. It could be. So there was a story that came out that caught my eye in Bloomberg. Let's see if my stupid computer will open it. There we go. In Bloomberg about... the first time Kushner met Henry Kissinger by Caleb Melby, David Koshinowski, and Jerry Smith. It kind of explains it being a precursor to the, if you're into this thing like I am, into the Mayflower Hotel speech. And it was essentially Trump's big foreign policy speech where he had, like, the Sergei Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, like in the front row, a bunch of other Russians were there. It's part of the reason the Mayflower Hotel is where a lot of these moving pieces have aligned. And what really hadn't been reported was Kissinger's role in that before. Well, I saw a little bit a couple weeks ago, but this is by far the most expansive reporting I've seen.
Kind of a scoop.
What was that?
It's definitely kind of a scoop for.
Yeah, so he's like the, looking for the exact term they use, but he's like the honorary chairman of this,
yeah, exactly that.
Public policy think tank.
Center for the National Interest.
Thank you. I'm like scrolling through this article like, hey, where is it? Center for the National Interest. I was reading about it a few weeks ago, and actually what surprised me is our current ambassador, Huntsman, who actually seemed like a fairly reasonable Republican. And I guess he still might be. But he's actually a part of this. So, like, there was a lot of, like, hubbub around that Helsinki summit. Like, why doesn't Huntsman... why doesn't he quit, like, in protest? And I'm like, well, he is part of this, like, the most Russian think tank in Washington. So, I don't know. Maybe...
Yeah, the most pro-Russian.
Yeah, most... Well, although the president is a Russian, too. But yeah, like pro-Russian in terms of their goals for U.S. foreign policy, not necessarily in terms of ethnicity or nationality. Mm-hmm. The article is fairly interesting. Way too many details to cover here, but it I don't know. It starts like... It's not necessarily directly related to, like, Mueller Russian investigation stuff. It's kind of more about how there seems to be... It's actually a little bit more related to Maria Butina. I think that's why they started looking into this, is because she has done some things with this think tank before.
Isn't she related to that investigation?
Technically not. She was indicted outside of the Mueller investigation.
That was just like a random other fluke.
It might... I never heard that it was referred by Mueller to a different group.
I mean, I assume that's what a lot of these, like, the things that are being reported are, because I know he's kicked off cases to the New York Attorney General.
Yeah, but this, but for the Butina case, I never read that. Because I was waiting to read it, and I never actually saw it.
Interesting. Okay, well, but anyway.
I mean, would we necessarily know if it had been? Like, I don't, I mean, do you have to, like, file that somewhere, that it's referred? Like, in open records? I
assume there would be in, probably in the trial, if she goes to trial, which, again, I doubt.
So, anyway, it's kind of interesting to see here, you know, Kissinger has having his hands in a lot of what Kushner's doing, which ties in with things we've talked about on the podcast with Israel, the Emiratis, the Saudis, the Russians.
Not the Chinese.
No, which is kind of his thing, right?
Well, I mean, he helped open relations with China, but I guess Nixon certainly didn't buddy up to Mao. Like, sure. Nixon would never have had that press conference with Kim Jong-un.
But, like, Kissinger goes into, like, China, as far as I understand, like, all the time, right? He's, like, meeting with, mm-hmm. I don't know, people over
party
there.
Party officials, yeah.
So, like, I mean, that's in general, I thought that was considered his area of expertise, at least in modern international affairs.
No, but he's also up to his eyeballs with the Saudis and Emiratis, so, and the Israelis, of course.
Well, apparently, yeah. Well, and the Israelis, yeah. He's a...
He is Jewish?
Famous, yeah, Jewish diplomat. Who probably came of age in, you know, the 50s when, you know, Israel was, you know, hanging on, through many wars and everything. What I found interesting is that if you would have asked me a year or two ago, I was under an impression that Hillary was tied in with Kissinger, and I suppose Kissinger is a smart guy.
He also is. Yeah.
Who just plays all sides.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You can't win if everybody's working for you, and yeah. You can't lose.
But they all kind of, like, seek his either endorsement, approval, expertise, knowledge, connections.
Isn't that where Obama and Geithner originally met? And they were interns for Kissinger and Company?
Obama was an intern for Kissinger?
Yeah, that's how he started. Yeah, seriously, look it up. That's where he went after college. He worked for Henry Kissinger. His hand on a stack of Bibles and a Quran. Did I lose you?
No, I'm just I'm trying to figure out. No shit, yeah. Here it is in... Well, here it is in Yahoo Answers, but I guess that... There's not a lot... Well, here, let me get rid of some of these connecting words. This is our segment, Google Search.
Our segment of Google search. We'll probably have to edit some of this out. Yeah, Obama Kissinger first job.
Oh, no shit. Weird.
After graduating from Columbia University in 1983, Barack Obama went to work for a firm called Business International Corporation.
Huh. Well, okay. Makes sense.
Wait. No. This was... That's crazy. What? No, he did seriously work for Obama. Or Kissinger worked for Obama. For his first job out of college. It is known. But yeah, that's where he met Tim Geithner and started that. What would ultimately become the fiasco that was the 2008 financial crisis.
What does that have to do with...
No, I'm just saying that's where Tim Geithner and Obama met. That's why they were...
They already knew each other.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why he...
Very easy to make that whole thing work.
Because Geithner was the head of the Federal Bank of New York, I believe.
Yeah, under Bush. And then he was named Secretary of Treasury.
Yeah. Okay. So 538 is saying that with 13% reporting in the primary, Tony Evers is out to a wide lead with 40%.
He is. 41, and according to the New York Times, it's Malin Mitchell's 20.
Malin Mitchell, no. Man. Okay, so last night I was tweeting about the last Democratic primary debate that occurred a week ago. Or, yeah, I think it was last week at least. What upset me a little bit was that Malon Mitchell was not in it, and they didn't really say why. He just said he informed them that day that he couldn't make it for whatever reason. And so I didn't really get to see him debate. He was on my list to vote for, but I just didn't know enough about him. And I think from a debate, especially the format of that debate that I saw, you can learn a lot about a candidate. You get a lot of their personality. It wasn't terribly in-depth. They only gave him like a minute to answer questions.
I thought the last question was actually in some ways the most interesting.
What would it remind me what that was?
If they lost, who would they vote for?
Oh, yeah.
Not you, then who?
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. It kind of showed like... It kind of helped you, like, triangulate their, like, politics.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen Vinehout was a popular choice, as was Kelda Royce. And then Tony Evers, I think, was the
vote-getter
in that?
No, that's not what I remember. I remember that all of them said Vinehout or Soglin, except for...
Soglin, who said if it weren't for him, well, if he weren't in it,
he said Soglin. He said Soglin. I know, like, I was actually really liking him in that debate until that end part. I'm like, what a shitty answer. Just everyone else answered the question. Just answer it.
Just name the person you like on the stage other than you. Oh, you only like yourself. Well, you're not going to be governor, douche.
That Josh Paid answered Kelda Royce, though.
She wasn't the only one, was he?
I guess I can't remember exactly. I know Flynn said Soglin. Evers said Vinehout. I think Vinehout said Evers, but I think she was just being...
I think Malin Mitchell also said Kelda Royce.
Well, he wasn't in this one. Have they asked that before?
Was it Mike McCabe? One of them.
Might have been McCabe. Yeah, it might have been. You might be right.
Evers is... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I found it interesting that some of them would even say Soglin, to be honest. Like one or two of them. Because I think Royce said Soglin.
Hmm.
Although her answer was like, I think it would just be interesting or something like that.
Yeah. Well, not very many counties have reported in so far. Door County is reported 100%, and Evers is running away with it up there. Mm-hmm. He's got a firm lead in most other places, like Waukesha County. He's like 10,000 to Mitchell and Royce's 7,000 between them. Like, I don't think Kelda Royce is going to get a plurality or even second place in any of these races in county level.
Hmm.
Mike McCabe won? Wait, where the fuck is Mike McCabe winning? In a county up north, Mike McCabe is apparently winning.
And it's because of his blue jean shtick.
It's Shawano County. Okay.
Looks like Randy Bryce Ironstache is beating Kathy Myers as of with 39% in, so they actually have a decent amount reporting. It'll probably be hard for her to win.
Yeah, 57-42 with 45% on New York Times. So
That's what I'm seeing here as well. So
Brian Stile is going to walk away with it on the other side.
Okay, that makes sense. Looks like Vukmir, as of now, has a big lead over Kevin Nicholson.
Whoa, hang on a second. I just wanted to bring this up. Paul Nalen is not the bottom of the fucking...
Okay, yeah, let's...
Primary. Like, he's third. Like, 12.3% of the Wisconsin's first 12. Congressional district are okay with the Nazi.
12. Well, there's got to be a margin of error in elections.
3,500 people? 3,600 people are literally okay with the Nazi. Okay, we're looking at you, Wisconsin's first district.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week where I was like, no, there's definitely white supremacists in Racine County.
Yeah.
Okay, the last thing I want to talk about is a hashtag embarrassing Wisconsin post from our legal advisor correspondent, Dave. He posted this past week. It's from I don't know what the hell this is. It's some blog or something called The Wild Hunt for Modern Pagan News and Commentary. And I actually found this article really interesting. It had a lot of quotes in it from politicians up there. And it's from Green Bay by Sean McShee, called Religious Invocation Dispute in a Wisconsin County. And it's about Brown County, Board of Supervisors? Yeah, County Supervisors. Like the same position that Fabi, one of our prior guests, has, but in Brown County. And I guess it's a big kerfuffle about whether or not to say a prayer beforehand and what words that prayer should say. And then I think didn't Freedom from Religion was getting involved. And most of the people actually in the board were like, here's some of the quotes. This is a colossal waste of time.
Quite immense.
What are some of the others? There's some good quotes in here. They quoted a Buddhist guy. Where is he? I can't find him now. But I think this kind of caught the attention of pagans because it's really easy when things get too Christian-y for that to be a threat to, which I'm sure you could speak to.
Yeah, it gets, there's some interesting rhetorical lines that people have to be careful to avoid crossing.
I think this is probably specifically why. The guy who proposed this, who is Patrick Evans, he is quoted once as saying, reported as saying, "If they are Wiccan, they pray to the devil," unquote.
Whoa. Okay, buddy.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's
he's not the only one who thinks that, unfortunately.
It's grossly, it's like outright wrong. Yeah, it's...
I bet half the White House fucking thinks that.
It's probably more than half, if I had to bet. It looks like some results are coming in. 23% reporting no.
All right, and is it looking...
It's looking about the same. It looks like Vinehout is ahead in Jackson County. But it looks like they have a total of, 32 votes reported. So 15 of those 32 voted for Kathleen Vinehout.
A couple things that I'm seeing that I think are of interest. Tim Pawlenty, former governor of Minnesota, is running again in their GOP gubernatorial primary. He's kind of like the... I was just watching that Game Change movie for like the 10th time because I love that movie, where it's McCain picking Palin, as his running mate. And Pawlenty's name is brought up in that movie as a, like...
The guy who should have won. Like, maybe that was the choice between then and the darkest timeline.
Well, who do you think should have won? McCain?
Well, I mean, do you think McCain would have won if he had had Pawlenty as his running mate?
No, because I kind of buy into the narrative of that movie, even though there's, like, this, like... like unforeseen consequences type thing. Like that's Steve Schmidt. I was just listening to an interview. He was the campaign manager who essentially picked Palin. Mm-hmm. And he's very openly atoning for his sins. He like partially blames picking Palin for the darkest timeline, but it's not so much because McCain didn't win. It's because that like injected this form of politics into our discourse, where they're like, facts don't matter. It's
the
all about
TV star.
Yeah, bullshit charisma, reality TV, the cult of celebrity. And granted, they thought Obama was just about the cult of celebrity, so, you know. But, in the beginning of the movie, and I believe they talk about this in the book, which is, you know, like a highly sourced, reported book, that they're like, all of our internal polling says that we can't win with Pawlenty. We can't win with, like, any of these, like, traditional white guy candidates. They don't move the needle. Like, yeah, they might be who McCain, you know, and if you look at the GOP at the time of 2008, most of their best politicians who would be the best presidents were probably white men. It probably still is that way, by the way. But, you know, so, like, the responsible choice would probably have been to pick Pawlenty or someone like that.
Right. I guess he was right. It wouldn't have moved the needle enough for it to matter, but Palin did.
I don't think Palin hurt them. Do you think she hurt them?
Oh, yeah, a lot. I mean, look at the super serious, like, statesman that it was John McCain, and then you pair him up with somebody who literally had a reality TV show with them, like, weeks of losing the presidency.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, now that I'm remembering, so if I recall... And the kind of the movie is about this too. Like, they were down by a decent amount before they picked her. They looked at everything and they're like, okay, the best we can get, like, our best polls say we can get within 5. So we need, that's why they had to take that risk, which was her. And so he lost by more than 5, I believe. I think at least electorally he got pretty trounced.
Yeah, it was embarrassing.
Yeah. And so I think Palin gave him, like, a bump and got it close again, but then as she, like, talked and people heard her, it, like...
Like, wait, what?
Yeah. I think then it sort of jumped off the cliff at that point. So anyway... Well,
her private emails got hacked and released. I mean, it wasn't hard to hack. I remember Yahoo email address, yep, and like some guy apparently just took 45 minutes and guessed her password.
So anyway, the reason I bring up Pawlenty is because he is, as of now, again, early, losing in the primary there in Minnesota. And, you know, I think there'll be kind of this narrative that is there a place for Republicans like that? And if not, that means the Republican Party is just moving into this, like, jingoistic, racist, nationalist Trump thing, you know, more so than they always have been. And
maybe we should have a DSA just so we have the Democrats and the DSA to continue our two-party state.
I think it's going to be three-party. I just think that it's like... I don't know how it's going to... the problem with a third party is, like, it's like that first step. It's like quitting, you know, like, something you're addicted to. It's like, the first day is the hardest or whatever. It's like, everyone can picture there being three parties, I think, fairly easily.
There's Tony Evers is now below 40%.
There's some nuance to, you know, like, exactly how it would work out. But I think everyone would be fine with three parties if it... had just always been that way. But how do we go from where we are now to three parties?
I mean, we've had three parties, like the Know-Nothings, the Whigs, the Bull Moose Party.
The Reform Party.
Oh, Ross Perot, come on.
They affected elections, but they never won anything. I mean, the Whigs did, but weren't the Whigs the second party? We have
first-past-the-post voting, so there's no advantage to having a third party. It's like just... It's not exactly to be a spoiler, but it's just to represent an opinion that's not represented and that's purely ideological because you literally have no chance of winning.
Yeah.
And that's maybe a failing of our American democracy because it keeps ideas stagnant and we still think there's no such thing as climate change and we have an entitled right to destroy the entire planet and rule it as we see fit.
Well, no, I mean, the problem with the democracy isn't... I mean, most voters think that climate change is a thing. That is something. I think so. I think I'm pretty sure.
Maybe we have a bubble here in Wisconsin, but I'm not so sure.
I would love to see national polling, but and I will try and find it. But what? Okay, here's something I heard the other day, which kind of shocked me. And I don't mean to say that the Democrat is the all, like, everything is good about Democrats, everything's bad about Republicans. But Democrats, in general, are the party of, you know, Al Gore, right? And in general, the Republicans are the party of Donald Trump, who, like, is like, there's no such thing. So, when it comes to climate change. And so, I just heard the stat the other day, which I've known a lot about the gerrymandering, and so, like, more votes get cast in Wisconsin, for example, in a few of the past elections, though not every single one, for Democrats than Republicans, yet Republicans dominate the legislature, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are more... The Democratic Party is the bigger party. Not talking about, like, potential to get new voters. There are more registered Democrats in the country than Republicans.
Yeah.
Doesn't that, like, fuck with your head, though?
Yeah, like, it does. Because it really shows, like, how much, like, the ratio of voting power in individual districts. Like, because your vote is probably not worth one voting unit, so to speak.
You know, and Senate seats, and... Yeah, I mean, it's all distorted, and that's why, you know, like, you hear the term minority rule brought up a lot recently, because, you know, that's what's happening.
I mean, but we haven't had, like, 50% of the goddamn voting, you know, registered voters show up to vote in how many fucking decades? Talk about minority rule. Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm just finding some of this now. Oh, come on. Give me a little bit better of a...
Leah, Vukmir's going to win? That makes me sad on the inside. Come on, Republicans. I thought you were better than that.
You thought they were better than that and would elect Nicholson?
I don't know what I was thinking, but Vukmir was the more compromised of the candidates. Okay. Jeremy Ryan only got 10.9%. Good showing. He got 3,200 other people to agree with him.
I mean, to me... okay, I wanted to ask you about this, and then we should probably keep wrapping up here. Yeah. Because I think this is related. So Nicholson is kind of this outsider, you know, whatever. He's, like, less party establishment. I think Vukmir actually had the Republican endorsement, right? Have you seen in Kansas all the shit with their governor's primary? How, like, the sitting governor who was, he wasn't elected. He, you know, became the governor when the prior governor
resigned.
Yeah.
In shame.
Yeah. Yeah, Brownback, yeah.
They're calling it for Tony Evers.
Calling it?
The New York Times is.
Wow, already. Okay. Well, let me just get this out. And so... Kobach, because it's Kris Kobach, right? Their current Secretary of State is like. So when they do general election polling in that state, he gets trounced by the Democrat in Kansas. Now, anything could happen between now and November, blah, 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 caveat. But, like, he doesn't win the general election there, whereas the other guy comfortably wins the general election there. There's like a 20-point swing amongst, like, centrists, independents, moderate Republicans, you know, and once you throw in the Democrats.
Reasonable people.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and I'm not really necessarily talking about, like, Nicholson's chances of beating Tammy versus Vukmir's, but it just, like, well, so, anyways, what I was bringing this up is because some of the Democrats there apparently are kind of, like, rooting for Kobach. But, like, deep in my soul, every time I was reading about that Kansas election this week, and I still think it's contested, it's like, I just want Kobach to lose because he's a terrible, terrible person.
Mm.
But it would be, you know, like, but if it gives the Democrats a chance, but at the same time, if Kobach won the primary, and then he, like, lucked into... you know, or used his, like, fucking corrupt practices as Secretary of State to win. No,
he is no longer overseeing the election.
Not totally.
That is, no, of course he can't. He has to certify it as Secretary of State.
Well, and all the people who work for him, his hand-picked crazy people, the people who are doing it instead of him. Handpicked crazy people. That might be our episode title. all right, so you're saying New York Times is calling it for Evers?
Yeah, he's got 38.9% to 74,000 vote. Like, it's 29,000 votes ahead of Malin Mitchell.
Interesting. 538.
Only 34% report. Yeah, only 34% reporting. So I don't know about getting it that early. Madison hasn't reported. Rock County, Racine. We've got like huge population centers of the state that haven't reported.
AP has not reported yet.
Obviously, Scott Walker's going to win. Leah Vukmir is. She's 35,000 votes ahead, so she's probably going to win on the Republican primary. Brian Stile, Randy Bryce, yeah, I think we can safely call that one.
Yeah, yeah, it looks like he's going to win.
Glenn Moore unfortunately won. Jim Sensenbrenner.
He's the worst. Yeah. By the way, I'm seeing some Gallup polling here about global warming. I don't have a... The polling I'm looking at right now is specifically broken down by partisan breakdown. But majority do think that it's... So it's like 31% of Republicans think global warming is not exaggerated. 96% of Democrats think it is not exaggerated, and 60. JS Online just gave me an update that Tony Evers win, and then 66% of independents think it is not exaggerated, and similar numbers throughout for thinking other ways of phrasing those same things.
Right,
it exists, it is occurring, so it's the majority, but that's brought down significantly by people who would call themselves Republican.
All right. Oh, yeah. Mandela Barnes is trouncing the other guy.
Cool. Hey, embarrassing. That's cool. We didn't get a chance to talk about, so maybe like it might be interesting. I just don't know that much about it as of right now, and I'm not seeing anything really being reported. But there are two Senate elections going on in Minnesota. And so, I don't... To me, that's fairly interesting. So maybe we'll talk about who won those for each party next week. Well, this has been kind of fun. I feel like Wolf Blitzer or something here, right?
Right.
Or Tim Russert back in the day. I mean, he's like the patron saint of election night coverage.
Oh, there is a special election. I see what you're saying. Wow, interesting.
Yeah, well, because they already were having what's-her-name's seat for re-election. I can't remember her name right now.
Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah. She's up for re-election, although she's very popular, so I think she's...
Yeah, she's just going to be a Browns.
And then it's just a wide open field for the other seat. So, like, that Richard Painter guy is running, but I think there's... I don't even think he's actually the favorite at all. But that's for Franken's seat. So anyway, this has been Tell Me What to Think. This has been Closing Thoughts here. It's been kind of fun. You can email us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. You can Twitter us at Bloated Nemesis and at green_weird, which is WYRD. You can use hashtag TMWTT, Embarrassing Wisconsin. What else? StoneDuckMedia.com. StoneDuckMedia.com. I have to pronounce that one right, for all of our episodes are up there, including last week's epic two-parter. I think that's most of it. You can find us on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, And, you know, rate, review, it helps us out. Share us on social media. Go to the Facebook page. I think that's it.
All right. Have a good week, everyone.
Yep. Have a good week. And if anything changes in that governor's race, we'll talk about it next week. Otherwise, I guess we'll just be shitting on Scott Walker for a couple months. All right. See y'all next week.
We're shitting on him more.
Days are sunny. Some days are rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains.